Welcome back. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Another feast today. Hope you're enjoying your lunch. Please continue to enjoy your lunch. But if you don't mind, give me your attention for a couple minutes before we get our program underway. I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago, and on behalf of... It's been a while, I guess. On behalf of our Board of Governors, please welcome back. And we have our former chair, Jackie Robinson Ivey, is here with us, and our chair emeritus, Dr. Edward Mazur. Dr. Mazur, welcome back. And thanks for always being such great hosts here at City Club. We have a lot to get to, and I as you all know, every one of you here matters, every table matters, because these sponsorships matter, so we can do what we do here, which is bring all you amazing folks together. So I really do want to acknowledge and with gratitude in the season of Thanksgiving, our sponsors today. That's the Civic Committee of the Commercial Club of Chicago. Ice Miller, thank you. The Illinois Retail Merchants Association, here, right in front. Loyola University Chicago, Jim, welcome back, Jim Clavin. Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council, Kevin and team, thank you guys. World Business Chicago, I see Phil's here and the World Business team. Thank you, Phil. And they're just coming off of their incredible event just a couple weeks ago at Navy Pier. Of course, the Cook County State's Attorney is here with us. The office of the Cook County State's Attorney. I hear the actual State's Attorney's here, too, as is Kirkland & Ellis. Where's Kirkland & Ellis? Another great law firm. They're right over there. Oh, and I'll mention we've got, as you know, so thank you to those sponsors. Really, that it is appreciated. And as you know, we gather the best and brightest from the different sectors here at City Club to talk about so many different issues. There's too much happening. We only have so many days in the week, and we try to find the right topics and the right speakers, but also the right people to get in the room and do this, you know, what you're doing, and hopefully making the city a little better by talking with each other and, you know, and advancing each of your agendas. So we have a number of elected officials in the room. I'd like to go through. We have the State Comptroller, Suzanne Mendoza, is here with us. Alderman, ooh, I didn't actually see him. I'm going out on a limb here. Alderman Timmy Knudsen is on his way. Okay. Alderman Brian Hopkins, I did see. Thank you, Alderman. Our home Alderman, our host Alderman. Alderman Bill Conway. Thank you. You all are quite busy as well. I don't think the county commissioner's here. Mayor Kathy Aducci, I believe, is here. Is Kathy? She's probably on her way, too. All right, so I'm going to do this with judges, and this is another thing. There are a number of judges, and if you understand from the history of our great speaker, she cares an awful lot about judges and has been involved in so many different organizations. So I'd like to have a special acknowledgement for all the judges in the room. And if you could stand when I mention your name, if you're able, and we'll hold our applause. And then I'd like to also ask if I missed somebody to please shout at me. Judge Tom Sienis, Judge Claire McWilliams, Judge Patty Sheehan, Judge Michael Cavanarji, Judge Maureen Connors, Judge Diane Marsalek, and did I miss any judges? And I'm very sorry if I did. Okay, thank you all for what you do. Everyone in the room understands how important the justice system is. Chicago, Cook County, and the state, of course. A few other people I want to recognize because of this great group. CTA President Nora Learson is here, and she's going to be speaking in January. So we hope you'll all be back here to pack the room for her presentation. I mentioned Phil from New World Business. I just saw Howard Tolman. Haven't seen Howard in a while. Thank you for your leadership. Marilyn Gardner is here from Navy Pier. Mentioned Kevin from the Carpenters. Matt Tully, thank you for always being here and being supportive. John Lausch is here. John deserves a... we talk about public service all the time here, and what a great job you did for our city, our state, our entire region in your service to the federal government of the United States. Thank you for all of those efforts. Can you come back? Can we make that official? Can we invite you back somehow? Thank you. We mean that, and as we so much appreciate public service, and former public servants like David Reifman is also here. Marilyn Rubio from Clayco is here. Just a great group of great mix of business, philanthropic, labor, elected officials, you name it, and they're all here to see one person and. That is Eileen O'Neill Burke's husband, John. Or I'm sorry. Oh, no, wait. He's here also to support his wife. And with public service, we appreciate families of public servants, right? Because it's a family effort. So thank you. Thank you, John, JD, for sharing your wife with the Cook County and the city of Chicago. Okay. That out of the way. Thank you for indulging me. And if I didn't mention your name, just come back more often, and we'll do that again. Yeah, thanks, Donovan Pepper. Let me check and make sure your membership's renewed. Okay, you are here not to hear from me, although I will be asking a few questions of our speaker after she wraps up a presentation, so keep those questions out there if you've got them. She's a fourth-generation Chicagoan. Eileen was born and raised on the Northwest Side and graduated from University of Illinois in Chicago Kent College of Law. And as you know from various parts of your life, she served as a Cook County State's Attorney. She served as a not only a prosecutor but also a defender. She was elected a justice of the appellate court. She has been the head of every association, I think, of judges. We have the bio online. Clearly well respected in that community, but very clearly well respected here. In Chicago, in Cook County, on close to her 1 year anniversary of being in office. She's also a neighbor of mine in the South Loop, and a great Chicagoan and a great public servant. Please join me in welcoming to the City Club of Chicago, State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for having me, and that was a very nice intro, Dan. So I thought we'd start out here. This is Cook County State's Attorney 26 in California. We have 17 different locations all around Cook County. This is probably our biggest one. That's the one that probably garners the most attention, so I thought we'd start there. Everything I'm going to say today, I'm going to be using we. And I haven't gotten so filled with myself that I think I'm royal. It's we got so much done because of the team I have assembled. So I'm not particularly talented in too many things, but I do have a gift, and that is a gift to be able to pick really talented people and put them into places where they can make seismic change. So I want to introduce them. Matt McGrath is my comms director. Craig Engebretson is my first assistant and really amazing. Garvin Ambrose is our chief of staff. And some of you may remember Don Black from the campaign. He was my campaign manager, and he is our deputy chief of staff. He's my right hand. They call Don the Eileen Whisperer. If anybody needs to give me bad news, they're like, you go tell her. My chief of policy, Yvette Loizen, who is a very trusted advisor. And I heard Hollis Hanover is here. Where is she? Hollis is in the back. Hollis is our director of hiring and recruitment, and she is blowing the doors off hiring and recruitment. So thank you. So 1 year ago, we came into office and we were trying to figure out what are the priorities? What is it that we have to tackle immediately? And pretty quickly, we knew that it was assault weapons. We saw the ravages of assault weapons, and it's kind of hard to remember right now. But a year ago, we were seeing record numbers of people being shot and killed every single weekend. We were setting records for the amount of murders, the amount of shootings that we were. So assault weapons had to be our first priority. But it very quickly became evident that domestic violence was also a major problem. It is not a solved problem. I wish I could come in here today and say, and we tackled it. We've had over 40 women killed by their domestic partners since I took office a year ago. It is a significant problem, but we're going to talk about it. And we knew we had to do training. We had a very young state's attorney office. Much of our institutional knowledge had left. So we knew we needed to bring our training up to snuff, and we needed to do it quickly. So first thing was assault weapons. And the reason why I like to show this video is because it's a specific type of assault weapon that we didn't see before 2019. In 2019, a machine gun conversion device was introduced in all major cities. A machine gun conversion device, I usually bring a demonstrative aid with me, and I forgot to do that today, but it's a tiny piece of plastic that can be made in a 3D printer. It can be made in about a half hour. It takes about 10 seconds to take a handgun, pop one of these machine gun conversion devices, they're called MCDs, into the gun, and then the gun can fire 30 rounds per second. This is what was causing the enormous jump in shootings and murders. It was the use of these weapons. So this is a trained ATF field agent. And if you could notice, he is stationary, holding his arm stationary, and the nozzle of that gun is not stationary. When you equip a gun with this and with an extended magazine, it's difficult to control. The bullets go everywhere. That's why we were seeing people who had nothing to do with the dispute getting swept up in gunfire. The possession of a gun with an extended magazine, an MCD, a laser focus, or a ghost gun, those are all elevated felonies. Those are class 2 felonies. Regular handgun, I don't have a license, is a class 4 felony. So it's not just me as the state's attorney said, we're going to treat these differently. The law treated these very, very differently, but they weren't being treated differently by the state's attorney's office. So on day one, we said, you're caught with one of these. We are asking for detention and we are asking for jail time. So this is what we have seen in the last year. So in the prior administration, in pink, you'll see that they asked for detention about 78% of the time that these guns were found. We asked for it in about 97-98% of the cases. This is what we're seeing, that our detention rates have significantly improved. So in the prior administration, they got about 41% detention when we requested it, and now we're getting about 76% detention. The reason for that is first appearance court is now where you're making that argument for detention. No one can be detained unless or until the state's attorney's office files a petition to detain. So you can file a petition as long as it's a detainable offense, but what we weren't presenting was the full picture. So what we did is on day one, we embedded two investigators in first appearance court. Their whole job is to look for all sources of information about that offender. So there were certain statistics, there were certain data centers that we couldn't get access to. So immediately we went to the chief judge and we said, we need all of this information so that when we go in and ask for detention, that judges will know exactly who it is that we're asking to detain. So, and I know Dan's going to ask me, so I don't want to get into the weeds about electronic monitoring yet, but we can talk about that in a minute. This is our domestic violence issues. We knew we had to address it immediately. This is our court dog named Hattie. She's taken her oath of office on the Illinois statute books. We knew that there was, they were all thrown together in a bureau called Special Press. It wasn't working. So what we did is we tried to find the common theme for different crimes and figure out, like, what a better organization would be for them. So we took a look at all of the crimes where victims are particularly traumatized. Sex assault, domestic violence, sex crimes against children, human trafficking, internet crimes against children. We took all of those cases and we put them together in one bureau because it lets us do a couple of different things. It let us specialize our training. How do we get somebody through a trial court experience without re-traumatizing them? How do we get a traumatized victim to be able to testify and make it through this process? But it also, and Hattie is a huge factor in that. When we're bringing in children that have to testify, she can go into the witness box with them. And she sits at their feet. And I thought this was all a little bit woo-woo, to be honest with you. I was like, yeah, okay, a dog. And one day I had a particularly contentious meeting, somewhat similar to that one. And I get off the Zoom call and I was like, is Hattie in the building? And they said, yes. So I went upstairs. She's laying on a couch with her feet in the air. I spent 5 minutes with that dog and it was literally like every bit of tension drained out of my body. So I'm a true believer in Hattie. We're trying to get her in more courthouses, trying to get more dogs. So we created this entire Special Victims Bureau. It allows us not just to specialize our training, but it also allows us to recruit a certain type of person who wants to walk through a trauma with someone, who wants to be their state's attorney throughout this entire process. It's called a vertical prosecution model. And it means that you have one state's attorney, as opposed to other types of crimes where you'd have a different state's attorney at every stage of the game. So that's what we're focusing on, special bureaus. Also, in first appearance court, we knew we needed to embed our investigators just to handle domestic violence cases. So if someone has a criminal order of protection, we would know that immediately. But a lot of people get civil orders of protection. If they're getting a divorce, their divorce attorney will file it in domestic violence court. We didn't have access to that. We had no access to civil orders of protection, and that was something we had to change day one because that's a lot of information that we were missing. So we had to get access to all the reports. So what we are seeing in aggravated domestic batteries are we had about an 84% request for detention before, and now we are up to 96% detention. And we went from a 61% detention rate to about an 85% detention rate. So we are able to do our jobs much, much better. So these are the silos on Damon Avenue. I like to use this as an illustration because our office was very siloed. It was appeals, never talked to the criminal bureau. Civil, never talked to criminal. So we started breaking down the silos. And I came out of appeals, and appeals was always kind of like the stepsister of the state's attorney's office. We were the nerds. And so we decided that there are certain cases that we need to have the law dogs on from day one. So on those cases, we now have a litigation support unit where somebody from the appellate division comes and drafts the motions, the pretrial motions, motions in limine. They sit with the trial team, and as issues come up during the trial, they're the ones who are drafting the responses with the current case law and the most effective arguments that can be brought. It puts us in a much stronger position when cases go up on appeal. We know that we have done everything we can in compliance with the law with our law dogs on there. But we were also seeing it on crime has changed with regard to, a lot of times we would go and see a narcotics trafficking operation or a human trafficking operation. And when we went in, we would see that, oh, they also have credit card theft. So what we're doing is bringing in our financial crimes ASAs who know how to read a financial spreadsheet. So we have our ASAs who are prosecuting the narcotics trafficking, and we also have the ASAs who know how to prosecute a financial crime. We're working together. And this is what I tell that Bureau of Financial Crime, Cyber Crimes, is the only thing we ever got Al Capone on was tax evasion. I will use every single tool we have at our disposal to put people in jail when they commit crimes. So our third issue was hiring. The state's attorney's office was severely depleted in our ASAs. So over the last year, we have hired 94 assistant state's attorneys, and we brought in 202 clerks and interns. So we are on path to be back fully staffed. My love was training. I always did training with the judiciary. It was for a decade, I taught every judge in Illinois civil procedure, which making civil procedure funny is not easy, I will just say. And so I, as soon as we came in, this is my love, is training. And we brought in a curriculum director, Cordelia Copelson, who has been unbelievable. So we did leadership training for all supervisors in the office. We did management training. How do you do a PIP? How do you get somebody who's having issues the help that they need? There's, we had every single person in the office do an up-to-date ethics webinar, and they had to do it by the end of January. So it was, we knew we were getting the foundation done on everything. We did not have the personnel to have entire dockets for cybercrime, but anybody who has an elderly parent right now can tell you cybercrime is an issue. They are targeting the most vulnerable people in our population. The U.S. Attorneys, pardon me, John, but the U.S. Attorneys will not touch financial crime if its value is less than $500,000. That's a lot of seniors' entire retirement savings that is gone. We needed to be able to fill that void. So what we did is we partnered with the Department of Justice and Homeland Security, Secret Service, and all of our local partners who do this work, and we did a training. We selected 20 of our assistants to go through this training, and it was about 20 to 30 hours of training, and now they're cyber specialists. So when these cases come in, they are specifically assigned for it. We're going to continue to use this model as we see crimes that might not have enough for an entire docket, but have a sufficient amount. Animal cruelty is what's coming next. That's probably not enough for an entire, I hope it'll never be enough for a docket, but it will be enough for people who are interested in it to really understand the law. We started combining trainings with our assistant state's attorney in law enforcement. Law enforcement is our main, if not our sole witness on each and every single case. We need to have a working relationship with them. So on day one, Superintendent Snelling and his command staff and our exec team started sitting down saying, okay, where are the problems? What can we do to fix this? How can we get officers back out on the street faster? How can we get our cases in the best position they can be by the time it comes to first appearance court? So we have started doing Fourth Amendment training all over the county with the Illinois State Police as well as with CPD, and now we're going to start going out into suburban police departments as well. We also did all new detective training. And the reason why is I want not just our ASAs to be the best versed in the law attorneys. What if our police were the best trained in the law? That's a game change. That changes how we interact with the community. It changes how they feel about policing and law enforcement. So the FBI has now ranked, this is a fairly recent statistic, of cities that have a population over 100,000. Chicago's rank in the top 100 is, any guesses? 92nd. We are now on par with New Haven, Connecticut, Bakersfield, California, Wichita, Kansas, and Warren, Michigan. So if I have any request for anybody in this room, spread this word. Chicago is a beautiful place to raise a family and bring a business. We are back on track. So, this year, we are on pace to have less than 400 homicides. We have not seen that number since 1965. That is a significant achievement. This is with regard to fatal shootings are down 32%. Robberies are down 34%. Vehicular hijackings are down 49%. All violent crime is down 22%. We are making progress. I'm not saying that the state's attorney's office gets the credit, but we get the credit. No, I'm just kidding. I hesitate to put this out because I don't take credit for things. You can get a lot done if you're not looking for credit. There's a lot of people that deserve credit. Superintendent Snelling deserves a lot of credit. The judges who started listening to our detention arguments get a lot of credit on this. We're not done. We are nowhere near done, but this is a good start. So, in the future, this is what's coming up. Crime is now almost always on video. So, we need to have the capability of getting through video. But it's not just video. Science has advanced in a significant way. DNA, ballistics, cell phone data. We can take somebody's cell phone and find out exactly where they were at any given time. We can take a shell casing and put it into a Niben machine, and that machine will tell you where else that gun has been utilized. That's significant changes in science, and it's irrefutable. There is no human error when you are using scientific evidence. So I want to give an illustration. Netflix's entire catalog is 36,000 hours of video. The Cook County State's Attorney's Office is right now retaining and disseminating over 200,000 hours of video. Every single case has hours and hours of video. So I want to use this as an example. Many of you might remember this. About a month ago, somebody stole an ambulance from a Westside hospital, drove through the city, and eventually this is what happened. So okay. As you're watching this, please take a look at all of the different vantage points. So what is happening is the helicopter video, all security video on every single street, ring cameras, pod cameras, every single camera that can trace this. Then we have about 30 different squad cars. They all have dash cams. And we have several dozen officers. Each and every one of them has body-worn camera. So on this incident alone, we're probably looking at 20,000 hours of video that has to be gone through. There is not enough hours in the day for our assistant state's attorneys to run their court call and somehow go through this, redact what it is we're going to be using, and tender it to the defense, which we're legally obligated to do. So we are drowning in video right now. So the blue line is 2018, how much video evidence we had, about 6 hours per felony case, and now you can see it's closer to 25 hours per felony case. It's a significant burden. So we need to have the technology and the capability to go through this evidence and present it in a way that a jury can understand and see it. So the goal here, and I stole this one right from the City Club, so the goal is Chicago is going to be the safest big city in the U.S. So I'm going to end with Daniel Burnham's quote, "Don't make any little plans." We are not making any little plans. We are shooting for the sky. We are aiming high, and we're thinking big. So I think you got some questions for me now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Make sure this works, and I'll ask you to take a seat.
Okay.
Good. Thank you. And again, apologies, folks. We are an open forum here, so we appreciate freedom of public, freedom of speech, and they were paying ticket holders. So.
Wow.
So, but when you interrupt an event, you're not welcome here, because we appreciate civil discourse, and thank you all for being polite and allowing some folks to find their way out. You've made it. Now you're here at City Club, and
yes,
you've got a protester.
And I got protested. I'm surprised they know my name half the time. I'm a county official.
Well, a county official who's been incredibly busy over 1 year. You were here while you were a candidate, and it's been a year. Before we get into some technical questions, how are you doing? How are you holding up? You have people telling you how great of a job you're doing. You've got all these great stats, and then you have a few people who probably don't agree with you. You probably have some people who...
They think I'm Trump.
Right.
Yeah.
So how are you holding up? How has this year been for you?
It has been enormously gratifying. It really, truly has. Like, the question I got asked a lot when I first came in is, what did you find? You know, what did you find in the state's attorney's office? And I said, well, you know, we had all heard about all the attrition and how bad the morale was. And I will tell you what I found is people who really believed in our mission. People who believe that we are there to represent the victims and we are there to uphold the law. And they continued to do the job when they were overworked, understaffed, and even undermined at some times. And they continued to carry out the mission. So it's been great.
And if you were to name one, your greatest accomplishment a year, you know, you're not going to see results of this for a while, but what do you feel best about that you've been able to do in a year?
Oh, that's so hard. But I will say the people that I've put in leadership positions are truly, truly making the difference. We are getting stuff done. We are collaborating a lot with stakeholders. We're making a difference that way. We've restructured the office. So anybody who was a Cook County State's Attorney can tell you it's a very institutional place. Like, they have alumni still, and they had a certain way of doing things. And one of the ways was a special prosecution bureau. And it was a sacred cow in the office. It was like our homicide. It made no sense. It was like every different kind of crime was kind of thrown in special press. And we broke that apart. So we made special victims out of that. We made our multi-jurisdiction bureau out of that, where we can, you know, I keep saying this, but crime has changed. It used to stay neatly confined in city-county borders. It doesn't anymore. Now we're seeing, like, financial crimes, cyber crimes, trafficking cases, gun cases, that those all are crossing county and city lines. So we knew we needed to start getting in with our partners and making sure that we had a seat at the table. So Chicago has Chicago Gun Intelligence Center, CGIC, they call it. And so first week we were in office, we went and we're touring CGIC, and there was a sign that said Cook County State's Attorney. I was like, oh, great, we have people here. Who's here? Nobody. State's Attorney never sent anybody there. So what CGIC does is every shooting is all the stakeholders are sitting around the table. ATF, CPD, U.S. attorneys, State's attorneys, every stakeholder who might have a hand in that. And we talk about the case and who's better suited for it. Is this case that's better suited for the feds or is it better suited for us? But the partnerships that we've developed now are helping us build cases, build stronger cases.
So you're calling ATF, CPD, your partners?
Yes. Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think that's a strong signal to a lot of folks in this room. Historically, there's a lot of finger pointing. It's the judicial system. It's the police's fault, it's the mayor's fault, it's the state's attorney's fault. It's refreshing to hear that these are partnerships. Is that the reality?
We are never going to get anything done unless we start working together. And this whole vilification of the other side or people who don't think exactly how I do on things, it just grinds everything to a halt. And so that was really important to every one of us on the exec team, is to make sure that we were making these bridges, that we were making sure that they felt comfortable bringing cases to the state's attorney's office, that they knew that we were dedicated to this job and we were adequately trained to handle those things.
That is, like I said, that's refreshing. It's good to hear. And of course, at City Club, we agree. We've had each of those. We've had the police department. We've had the mayor. We had the governor. We had the state's attorney. And I do think in the last year, your name has come up in a lot of those.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
In a great way. Honestly, if you look back at our videos, I think that feeling of partnership and working together is really making a difference. And we are dedicated to doing more of that. So thank you for that. It's been a lot in a year. That said, you still have a few things to figure out, right?
Quite a few.
Okay.
Quite a few.
What's number one on the list?
Domestic violence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get into that, because actually we're talking about a program. Maybe you can help us piece it together. What's the number one issue now, and what can be changed or maybe solved or made better?
So there's a myriad of things. So our domestic violence court is at 555 West Harrison. So it's an enormously busy place, but we also have, at the same time that a woman has been battered, is showing up to court to get an order of protection, we also have placed all of these stalking no contact orders in there. Stalking no contact could be your neighbor trimmed your bushes too close, or somebody, you know, spilled something on your patio, or it's much less serious than a criminal order of protection, usually. Not always, but usually. And we have about 40% of the cases in domestic violence are these stalking no contact orders. So what we're trying to do and work with the Chief Judge's office is to move those out of domestic violence so that we have the resources and the bandwidth to make sure we're dealing with those cases that need to be addressed as quickly as possible.
Great. And like you might, I think you finished with making a little plans, right? These are big problems. These are big, but I think everybody appreciates when there are solutions that are within reach. Can you think of any solutions within reach? Maybe working with partners like the police department and others for a couple of things. And I want to mention teens downtown. I don't know what we're supposed to say. And transit, you know, and a couple of those things you have, I believe, gotten more involved with. But they seem like problems that can be solved with the right partnerships. What are you thinking on those? What's your thinking, and what's your, do you have any initiatives underway?
So with regard to the teen things, I will always defer to Snelling on that. If Snelling thinks that something is, that guy's the real deal. I mean, he really knows what he's doing. He has the trust of the law enforcement rank and file as well. So if Snelling's good with an initiative, I'm usually good with an initiative. So I'm going to defer to him on that. With regard to the CTA, Nora came over to our office and we started walking through what are some of the challenges, what are we seeing, and what we realized is we need to get as much information as they have about the actual crime. Can I tell them about, you have a lot of security on the CTA? There is a significant, it's
there
kind
might be
of
a presence
like,
in the room.
Yeah, it's kind of like Total Recall, if anybody remembers that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. They had that level of technology on the CTA. But we need to make sure that we're getting that as soon as we go into first appearance court. Because if seeing a video is totally different than somebody describing it to you. So the more that we can coordinate and get as much information as possible, as quickly as possible, I think we can send a very strong message. So similar to the machine gun conversion devices, we started sending a very strong message that these crimes will be taken seriously. We do not think you should be carrying a gun that could fire 100 times in 3 seconds. That is the law says you shouldn't be carrying that. So by changing how we approach that, we were able to change how many shootings happened. I want to do the same thing with CTA crime. I want to do any time a violent crime happens on the CTA, we are asking for detention and jail time because that's our function. Our function is to be a deterrent. And, you know, anybody who took Criminology 101 can tell you the deterrent is the likelihood of being caught and the likelihood of being punished. And the punishment factor was our bailiwick, and we weren't doing our jobs, but now we are.
I'm going to try to fit as much in as well and get as much information out of you as possible in 5 to 6 minutes.
I can talk about the state's attorney's office for 2 hours.
So. Well, okay, let's get into the Safety Act for a minute. There are a couple of we did have some questions. I was hoping to get a couple more audience questions, but I'm going to Jennifer Brown mentioned how can we address crime attributed to the Safety Act with no cash bail and sanctuary policies in order to ensure safety for all residents and prevent recidivism.
So let's talk about the Safety Act. I want everybody to have the same grounding of what it is and what it does. Safety Act, first of all, it was a 1,000-page bill. It wasn't like something you could peruse in an hour and see if you were for or against it. But fundamentally, what the Safety Act does is it changes how we approach pre-trial detention. So it used to be, and everybody has seen this, that if somebody came in and was charged, a judge would set the bond. So the more serious the offense, the higher the bond. We've all seen that. Murder would be $1 million bond. So what the Safety Act does is it says we're not going to look at money anymore. We are going to solely look at, are you a danger to the public or are you not? And I think we can all agree that's what the criterion should be. You shouldn't be a Jeffrey Epstein and be able to buy your way out of jail if you're a danger to the public. But at the same time, somebody who's not a danger to the public should not be incarcerated before they're found guilty. I think we can all agree that's a step forward. That is something that we're one of the first states in the nation to try to do that. So it is incumbent on us to say this is working. That I agree with. But it's incumbent on the state's attorney's office now to establish that somebody is a danger. And the way that we do that is we make sure we have all of the information about someone's background or about this particular offense that makes them a danger. If they're not a danger, I don't care if they're being monitored or not. Go about your life. Get ready for trial. If you're not a danger, there's no reason to put someone on electronic monitoring. It doesn't make any sense to do that. So the Safety Act has made significant changes, but there are changes that we can rise to the occasion and meet. And I think we've shown that by the way we're approaching detention. We just have to make sure the judges have the information that's necessary.
And is electronic monitoring working? I mean, we talked a little bit about the blue line. I think there was some news recently, other you know, cases in the news where electronic monitoring there, folks have been out. Is that sufficient?
So we do have a new chief judge. We had a new chief judge get assigned yesterday, and this is going to be something that we're looking into and talking about and seeing ways that we can make that system work. It's not my preference. If somebody is a danger, I do not want them on electronic monitoring. So, but if they're not a danger and a judge doesn't feel comfortable releasing them, that it's almost like a split the baby kind of thing. If we're asking for detention, judges will say, well, I don't want to detain him, but I'm not going to just release him. I'll put him on electronic monitoring. And that's a false equivalency. It makes people feel safe, and they are not safe.
Okay. You were talking about guns. I have an interesting question here, specific, timely. I'm just going to read it. Brandishing weapons in the city of Chicago is against the law. Again, this is not a statement. This is a question from Brian Heffernan. Border Patrol and those law enforcement sent by Texas are out of their jurisdiction. What are they? Why are they not arrested and prosecuted to the full extent of Illinois law, among other crimes?
So this was a question that came up a lot. And so I am a state court prosecutor, which means my jurisdiction is for state crimes. All of the Border Patrol and ICE agents are federal agents. They are regulated by the federal government. The state system has no ability to weigh in on what the federal system is doing. It's called the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution. I like that little term. That's a fun one to throw around. So I do not have the authority, the jurisdiction, or the ability to charge any ICE or Border Patrol officers with any crimes while they are within the scope of their duties. But if an ICE agent went and got drunk after work and drove drunk, well, then I have jurisdiction over him. It would only be if they committed crimes outside of their purview as an ICE agent. That being said, the state's attorney's office did have a significant role. The state, under Kwame Raoul, we don't have the authority to sue on behalf of the state. Only the attorney general, Kwame Raoul, does. So Kwame filed a case to prevent the deployment of the National Guard here in Chicago. And what we could do is file an amicus brief. So for those who are not lawyers, it's you could say it amicus or amicus, whatever fancy way you want to say it. But it means we're a friend of the court. We're not a party to this case, but we have some issues that this is causing. It is causing irreparable harm. And there were three things that we focused on. And the first is that by deploying the National Guard here, you are giving the impression that Chicago is a very crime-ridden city. It is a quelling effect on businesses and tourists and people who want to come here. And I think you've just seen that that is just not borne out by the data. Chicago is not a crime-ridden city right now. So to have them deployed here creates irreparable economic harm to the vitality of our city. That was one. Second way we said this is irreparable harm is by having ICE agents and Border Patrol surrounding courthouses, which is what they were doing. Our victims and our witnesses will not come forward. They will not come to court. And if they don't come to court, we have to dismiss charges and release very violent predators back out into the community. That's irreparable harm. The third thing that we saw is over the last year, we have really been building up our interactions with the community, that we wanted to rebuild the trust of the community with law enforcement, and we started to make significant progress with that. And you could see that by our clearance rate. We had previously had about a 10% murder clearance rate in Inglewood. We are now up to a 78% murder clearance rate in that same area. So we were getting a lot of traction and having the community feel safe, that they could come forward, they could testify against people, that we could make this system work better. And all of a sudden, we had these agents walking through town, racially profiling people, stopping them, demanding their papers because they were dark. And most people do not see the difference between ICE agents and all other law enforcement. They just group them together as law enforcement. That erodes all of the trust that we need to have from the community. So by having that, that was also an irreparable harm. And I will say this, the federal district judge cited the arguments that we put forward in the amicus brief and denying the National Guard the ability to deploy in Chicago. So the state's attorney's office did have a role, but we will always stay in our lane. I will only do what the jurisdiction and the authority conveyed in me by the Constitution allows me to do.
Okay, I'm getting, I'm buzzing all over. I think we're out of time. I'm going to ask you one final question. I'll give you
a
minute.
Yeah.
I'll give you a minute because I'm going to go through some of the programs we have coming up. But what should we be talking about here at City Club? And you can think about that. What maybe if you were to devise a program or two or a series, And I'm going to mention some that we have coming up, so you all come back, and then we'll come back to you and hear maybe some thoughts on what we really need to dive deeper into. And then maybe we could work on a couple programs together. We can get experts like we do with all of you in the room to come to the table and or the seats and create this incredible civil discourse. I'll give you that second, because right. I'm going to mention to all of you, for those programs that are not sold out, we have a whole host of great programs coming up. Neighborhood Voices, 20 Years of Growth and Community Vision on December 8th is about Little Village. Democracy Under Siege, Safeguarding Our Elections and Preserving Voter Rights is coming up. Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch is coming up on January 6th. That's sold out. The Chancellor of U of I, Charles Lee Isbell, is coming January 8th. Kristen Reynolds from CHU Chicago on the 13th. University of Chicago economist Jens Ludwig on gun violence. That's going to be really interesting.
Oh, he's
on
great.
The 14th. Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkel, Gia Biagi, the Secretary of Transportation, and, of course, the Commissioner of Aviation. Whew! This is all happening in the next month or so. It's going to be busy. I'd love to have you back in some capacity, maybe as part of a discussion, but I'd also love to hear some ideas of other things that we should be addressing, not just the people up here, but what topics can we dive a little bit deeper into that maybe in a year we can go back and talk about how we did.
I got one. Juvenile
Great.
Crime.
Juvenile crime.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So we're going to work on this, and I'm going to talk to your office, and hopefully we'll get you all back here, and I'd love to hear some ideas, and I open that up to everybody. If you have ideas for specific programs, there are only so many days in the year, but you are amazing. You're doing amazing things under incredibly difficult circumstances. Thank you for your commitment. Thank you for dealing with the pats on the back and the shouts and the you name it. We appreciate public service. We appreciate all you've done in a year and look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.